Hey everyone, welcome to Danny Chats. This is episode number 21, and today I'm joined by Ajax or Aaron. How's it going, Aaron?
It's going pretty good. How are you doing today?
Yeah, very good, man. Very good. And you're calling from sunny California.
Sunny California. Well, it's not too sunny today, but yeah, sunny California.
Yeah. Normally, when I see you on Instagram, it looks really nice, man.
Yeah, it's normally really nice and bright, but just the past couple of days it's been a little overcast, but I think coming next week it's going to be nice and clear again.
Yeah, nice man. And talking of your Instagram, you are like by far the happiest person I know, like just constantly giving out good vibes, man. It's really good.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. It's something that's very very important to me to express, like just whatever I'm feeling, just off the cuff, whatever I'm feeling, just go ahead and spread that to whoever may need
Yeah, man. I like it when you're in the car. You've always got some banging tunes on, whether it's like some old
it.
school tunes or new music. It's good.
What's interesting is when I was in the hospital, it was like the first time I had ever gone maybe about like 2 months straight without listening to music. And since I've been out of the hospital, it's like music every day. I started from
Yeah.
morning until night every day, just to keep my vibe going.
You didn't have headphones with you in the hospital?
I didn't, but since I was sedated for so much time, like it'd be
Yeah.
2, 3 weeks at a time, I was under sedation, and then I come up and just being on all of that medicine, I just didn't know what was real and what was fake. So I really wasn't trying to listen to music very much. I was just trying to grasp reality and kind of figure out
Yeah.
what was going on around me.
Yeah, so just to clarify for everyone listening, you had well, you initially had a liver transplant, and then you had to have a second one, and then a kidney transplant at the same time. So, do you want to just sort of go back to how it all started?
So I was born with biliary atresia. And so what that is I didn't have an ability to dump bile out of the liver. So, the liver filtrates the whole system and it dumps bile. My bile ducts were blocked.
Yeah.
So I had to get that clear passage. So my whole life I knew I was going to have a transplant. I just didn't know it was going to be that bad. And then at UCLA where I got my transplant, they wait until you're pretty sick before you can get one. I mean, naturally, people who are more sick need it more. So
Yeah.
by the time I went in the hospital, that was November 10th of 2019. And I got my first, well, when I was admitted into the hospital, I have 5% liver function. So
Wow.
they didn't know how I was even alive. I went to sl I don't remember going to the hospital that day. Just I guess my numbers were so crazy, I was just out of it. And I remember waking up November 19th. And then they asked those normal questions like, "What's your name? Do you know where you are?" and all of that stuff. And I knew my name and I knew I was in a hospital, but I just didn't know, like where I was really.
Yeah.
And then they had to sedate me again. I missed Thanksgiving. That's something that I really wanted to try and make it to. We were going to try and have like some type of Thanksgiving in the hospital room, but I was sedated during that time. I had to have a couple surgeries. And then I got my first transplant on December the 9th. Probably around December the 15th, it started to fail. And then I remember my birthday, I remember New Year's, and then I remember the day after New Year's, just not really feeling well at all.
Yeah.
And then after that, I woke up on January 16th. And since that first liver went bad, once it started failing, my kidney started failing. So that's when they realized that I was going to need a liver and a kidney. So they did another surgery on me. I think it was on December the 10th. And then on December the 12th, I got both a liver and a kidney from the same donor.
Wow.
And yeah, and then here we are today. So.
So you know, that's two surgeries within such a short period of time. What an incredible
Yeah.
stress on the body.
Seriously. In total, it was 17 procedures and five major surgeries.
That's incredible. Incredible,
Yeah.
man. And you know, you talk about Thanksgiving and stuff. You've got family, so it must have been a really worrying time for all of them.
It was, but thankfully enough, I have type of family that is extremely supportive. So they have been my whole life. I never went a day without a visitor.
Nice.
So if it wasn't my parents, or I have two sisters, if it wasn't my sisters, then it was cousins, it was friends. I had some friends that flew in just to spend a day with me and just kind of hang out and stuff. So during my process, it was I never wanted to be left alone. I never wanted to go to sleep. I didn't like any of that in the hospital at all. So I'm thankful enough that, you know, I had a really good team behind me the entire time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know the hospital setup in America. Do you have your own, was you in your own room? Because obviously you can have joint wards where everyone's together or separate rooms.
So I was in my own room. A majority of that time there, I was in ICU. I was pretty bad. So I wasn't sharing a room at all during the entire process.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of nice not having to be with other people, I think. But yeah, at the same time, you know, you don't want to be that ill that you're in ICU.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's I mean, it's nice to have your own room and like your own space and stuff like that. But yeah, being that ill, not at all.
Yeah. And then so you come out of hospital and was you on like a really high dose of steroids and things like that?
By the time I got out, my steroid amount was, I think 5 milligrams of prednisone.
That's not bad, yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't too high, but while I was in there, it was really high, to the point where like, I couldn't see, like my vision was so blurry from the steroids that I was in there from November, 10th to March 6th of 2020. And, my vision didn't come back until probably mid-February, where I could start seeing again.
That's bad.
So that whole time, everything was just extremely blurry.
And did you know that that was because of the steroids, or was that, was you worried? I mean,
yeah, because I kept asking them, like, okay, I can't see stuff, like I can't see you, I can't see them, like I know they're there, and I know, like, you know, my family member silhouettes and stuff, so I can tell who they are. But I can't see anyone. And they even had like optometrists come in and look at my eyes. Like they didn't know what was going on. So it was really confusing. Yeah, I thought maybe my eyesight was gone and I was just going to have to maybe get some really, really strong glasses. But it was hard because I even had a PlayStation 4 set up in my room and I couldn't play it because I couldn't see the TV. So.
Yeah. And obviously your vision now, you're on. You're off the steroids or you're on a low dose, is all fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still wear glasses. I didn't wear them today because like that ring light gets a little tricky and it's like all on the glasses and stuff. My vision is like pretty much back to normal.
Yeah, man. So what was your life sort of like before leading up to your transplant? Was you really generally healthy, working, everything like that? Or was it a slow process where you were ill for quite a while, then the transplant came along kind of thing?
The transplant came abruptly. I had a pretty healthy life. I you guys call it football. I played football my whole life, basketball, never played American football. So no contact sports or anything like that. But yeah, basketball, played baseball. Went to college and I was working a pretty good job at the bank as a commercial banker. So my life was like, you know, it was on its way. And then in 2017, I started getting really sick and then I took a leave of absence from work and then I just never returned. And then everything just started to go downhill from there.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of a personal question in a way, but how did you find that? Because I was off work and I've only sort of started going back recently, but you know, mentally and stuff, when you're off work, it's hard. And when you're used to being the breadwinner and the one that's the provider and things, you know, and then you have to take a back seat, it's very, how did you find that?
First thing I had to do was I ran through my Instagram and I got rid of any Instagram page that was toxic because I knew I'd be spending probably a considerable amount of time on social media. Yeah. So any person or any business or anything like that that did a disservice to me, I got rid of all of that. And then I started kind of like reading books of, you know, how to change your frequency and not to give up and all of that stuff. So I started like building my mental strength just to get through all of that. And then I was trying to exercise. But what's interesting about the exercising is when my liver was failing, I started to lose muscle mass as a result. So I'm working out, but I can't make the gains that I used to make. So then that started to get a little depressing too. So I just put that to the side too. And just, you know, I just started hiking and going on walks and bike rides and stuff like that. Just to, so I have this motto on Instagram that I always use. And so I always had to continue to do stuff. Like I had to continue, like, you know, just to maintain a working mind so that I wouldn't sit still.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely great advice. And everything you've said, I can kind of relate to. Yeah. You know, just doing anything you can to keep yourself active and busy, and sort of feel like you're just still progressing, even if it's not where you would want it to have been, you know, you're still making them steps forward.
Yeah,
it's great. And like you say, the mind is the major part when you're dealing with something like this.
Yeah, definitely. Like I mean, hindsight is 20/20, and if I would have known I went through what I was going through, then I probably would have done the exact same things that I was doing. But I didn't realize that I was just kind of building my mental strength for what was to come. You know, I didn't know. And that's one of the things I was speaking to someone else on another podcast, and I was just like, I wish I had like maybe a mentor or something like that. Somebody who could have kind of prepared me for what I was about to go through. I just kind of had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, there's a young girl from the UK. She's got a podcast called Elijah. I'm not sure if you follow her at all. But she is now, from what I've seen, she's sort of doing that. She's being a mentor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I've been speaking with my hospital, and they kind of have a similar thing as well, where they had, when I was on the ward, they had people come around that were just transplant patients. They weren't doctors. They weren't anything. They kind of called them mentors and buddies. So, you know, for me, being on that ward, once you've seen all the doctors and they're telling you all this scary stuff, to have two people come around and they were just telling me about their holidays that they were going on, the food that they were eating, enjoying their garden. So all of that really helped.
Yeah. That definitely would have helped me if I had someone. I mean, they had the chaplains come by, but the chaplains don't really know what you're going through. I mean, they can help and pray for you and stuff like that, but they have no idea. So that would have really helped if they had some. You know what? I think I'm going to contact UCLA and see if like there's a program like that so that I can become involved, because that's something that I really like to do.
Yeah, because I mean, I was going to ask you, how, when you get told that you're having this operation by the hospital, for us, or for me anyway, I got told I was going to have the operation, and then I had like 3 days where I had to go and stay at the hospital, and it was, one day was kind of all physical tests just to test the body to see how I was going to do it. And then they did, they sat me down and they talked to me to find out how I was going to be psychologically and whether I'd need more support. Is that something that happens over in America, or do you kind of just get told you need this operation, get on with it, kind of, we'll call you when it's happening?
So I had to go through an entire program first. So you get entered into the program, and then you have like, kind of like you have like 2 or 3 days of like preparation and stuff, but that's just to get on the list.
Yeah.
So I had to go through all these physical tests and stuff like that, breathing and respiratory tests and stuff like that, just to check the physical body. And then I also had to meet some psychiatrists and stuff like that to see where I was mentally as well. So I went through that process when I wasn't really that sick. And then I was on the list, but my meld count wasn't high enough for me to get a transplant. So it was an entire time where I just go see the doctor like once every 3 months. They just check me out and then I go back home. But when it came time to actually get the transplant, I was already in the hospital. So that experience was totally different. Okay. And it was interesting because at one point I had a hospital room that was kind of near where the helicopter pad was.
Oh,
and
noisy.
One of the doctors actually told me that can be organs coming in. So like I would get anxiety and stuff like that, because I'm sitting there like, oh man, is that my liver? Is that my liver coming in and stuff like that? So it was very interesting time, you know, in that particular process. And then I also had a couple of instances where they got me prepped. So I was taking the medicine and I was doing all of that stuff that I needed to do and signing the anesthesiology paperwork and stuff like that. And then they came in and they were like, oh yeah, no, this one's not for you.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh man. So I had like, you know, a few days like that where they came and I signed paperwork and I got ready and it just wasn't for me.
Yeah. I had that twice where I got the call from the hospital. No, 3 times. And then the 4th time I had my operation. But yeah, you get the call and then we get rushed to hospital. And like you say, I mean, we had to shower in some sort of, you know, sort of special scrub stuff, and they get you all prepared, and then last minute they say it's not for you. And once that's happened once or twice, it's really hard to get yourself psyched up for them for any other time.
Seriously, yeah, like after that first time. And you know what was interesting, that the first time that happened for me, I guess it happened a couple times while I was sedated and I didn't know. So the first time it happened while I was awake and conscious, people were coming to visit me that day, and then they got word of it and more people came and they were sitting in the room. And then the nurse comes in, they're like, okay, they booked the OR. It's going to be probably about 3-4 hours. They're still looking at it. And then another person came in and I'm taking like the medication to get ready and stuff like that. And then the last surgeon walks in and his face is all red and he like looks kind of sad, probably because there was like 10 people in my ICU room. And he's just like, yeah, I'm sorry. Like, it's not going to be for you.
Yeah. It's a hard decision for the doctors, but obviously it's one that they've got to take really seriously, because to cut someone open is not a small thing.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And they don't want to be doing, they don't want to have to do it again if possible. So they want to make sure that that match is right.
Yeah. And it's interesting that the first one failed, but I wonder, you know, what would have happened if I hadn't received one in time. You know, like, I got the one that was right for me in January, but had I not received that one in December, I mean, I feel like that one was kind of like one to just hold me over until January when I got the real one.
Well, they kind of said that to me as well. They said, you know, unless you're really, really desperate, we won't give you one that, you know, that is going to fail. Like, we won't risk it. Because for me, I mean, I was all right. I had a blockage in my liver, but I was still pretty well functioning. There wasn't a point where I was in hospital like you. So, you know, I was lucky in that sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Was you on much medication before your operation?
I wasn't. I wasn't on very much medication at all. No, just they had me on some vitamin K and some iron pills, and that's about it.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
I mean, you were on some, so taking medication isn't too new to you, in a sense.
Yeah, no, like, my whole life I've always been kind of, like, on and off medication, so kind of getting that routine together hasn't been too bad. And then I was exercising a lot before I went into the hospital, so I was taking my own supplements and stuff, like omega fish oil and stuff like that, just to, you know, kind of keep my body healthy, so... The regimen of taking medication hasn't been that hard. The only transition or the only adjustments that I needed to make was to time, just knowing that I needed to take medication at like 8 and 8 or 7 and 7 and stuff like, or in the beginning it was like 8 and then 1 in the afternoon and then 8 at night.
Yeah. And as time goes on, as you get more and more busy, it does, sometimes you forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously, I remember the first time I forgot, and then I emailed my liver coordinator. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what's gonna happen? Do I need to come in right now? Like, I forgot my medicine. And she's like, no, just relax, just calm down, and just take your medication. But don't, like, you know, don't try your best not to miss. And like, even still, there's been times where I missed or I fell asleep and I have to wake up in the middle of the night and take my medication. Like, there's been those times. But as time has progressed, those times are becoming few and far between.
Yeah, I think because I was on medication my whole entire life, pretty much. You know, at first, when I was first ever ill, when I was a teenager, that medication was so important. I took it every day. And then if I did miss it, I had that same reaction as, you know, my mum did, because she was the one looking after me then. She rung up the hospital and she was like, you know, all right, if I was sick and I'd just taken it, she'd be like, you know, is he going to be all right? But so that's kind of helped me for this second time round of having my transplant, because I wasn't too panicky if I did miss a day. You know, they'd already explained to me that, you know, just don't double dose. That's the most important thing if you can. And so it wasn't. But I can imagine for people that are, you know, that are new to it, it is very, very worrying.
I was like super worried, like panicking and stuff like that. And then I emailed my liver coordinator, and then I ended up calling the emergency hotline and stuff too. Yeah. And she's like the backup coordinator, and she was the one that ended up calming me down. So
I didn't ring them up for that, but I rang them up. I got stung by a wasp like a few days of being home. So like, you know, they've told me all these things that could happen. So I'm like, oh, I'll ring them up just to be like, am I going to be okay? And they're laughing. They're like, I'm glad you rung. You know, it's just to get that question out, but you will be fine. Don't worry.
Yeah. It kind of like settles my nerves and stuff. Like, knowing that it is important, but like, if you miss a couple of hours, don't make a habit of it, but you don't have to panic.
Yeah. I think in terms of medication, it is, if you were to miss it over a prolonged time, then that's when the issues happen.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. And I find that having stashes of my medication everywhere. So I have some in my car, If you have a workplace, keep talking about your workplace. So if you do miss it in the morning, and by the time you get to work or when you're in your car, you can just take it.
You know what? I never even thought of that. And I used to keep like some of those supplements in my car and stuff too. But like, I have like the 3-day pill holder or whatever. So, I need to probably buy another case and stash them. That's a good idea. I appreciate that.
That's just years of practice.
Free game.
Yeah, years of practice, man. I used to have mine stashed at all my friends' houses, sort of all over the place.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah,
you never know, you know, if you've traveled 6 hours, especially in America, you got to fly to some of your mates' houses, like you say. You get there and you haven't got your meds, you know, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, seriously. I know before the medication wasn't that serious, but I had driven away to Palm Springs, which is like maybe 2 hours away, and I forgot my medication. I'm like, oh, okay, what am I supposed to do? I didn't want to drive back. So I had to make like calls, and then they had to give me an emergency prescription at this at the drugstore, and it was pretty expensive too, like to go outside of your prescription deal just to get some medicine. So I definitely appreciate the free game though. I'm gonna start stashing some meds over at my sister's houses and stuff.
Stash house, gotta have it.
Yeah. For real.
So what's the plans for the future? Because like I say, you are full of beans, full of energy, and I'm sure you must have some plans.
Yeah, so this, like dialoguing, speaking on different people's platforms that provide me the opportunity. And then after speaking with you today too, I want to contact UCLA and see if I can get some type of mentorship program or where I can speak to people, especially, kind of like younger people who go through the process as well too, so that they can get some kind of guidance. Because I know when I was in the hospital, like everybody around me was like 60 and older. Like there weren't that many young people in there getting transplants. So definitely get into some type of mentorship or buddy program or something like that. I actually just started a clothing line recently. So I started a small business, my LLC, and I'm working on putting all that together so that I can come out with my first line of sweatshirts. It's pretty interesting now, because it just, like, all my life I always felt like, you can't start this stuff until you get the transplant, or don't do this until you get the transplant. And it's like, now I don't have anything that's in my way. Like, okay, like whatever you wanted to do before, you do it now. Like, you don't even try, like just do it.
Yeah. And I think they're having the transplant takes the fear out of a lot of stuff that you want to do, because before you're like, what if it doesn't go right? What if this doesn't happen? What if it fails? But now, for me, I'm like, just give it a go. If it fails, it fails. Who cares? I've given it a go. Life's all about giving it a go.
Yeah, exact same. Like all of that fear has been eliminated. And it's like, whatever I want to try, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? It's not going to work. Okay, well, then I'll just move on to the next thing. Oh, well.
Yep, 100% that, man. And for anyone that's listening or watching, like, they should definitely come and check you out on Instagram and check out your clothing range, because you dress pretty fly, to be fair.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. Yeah. So I just started the clothing line Instagram page, which is The Real Juice Box LA. But I haven't put any of the merchandise up, because I'm trying to do trying to keep it all in house first before I let it out, getting my trademarks and copyrights and stuff like that, just to, make sure it's all mine. But then, you may see a glimpse of it on my regular Instagram, which is A_Jax_vibe.
Yeah, I'll put a link up to your Instagram up on the video as well, because the more people that follow you, the better, I think. It's just good.
Yeah, definitely. Good vibes. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Brilliant. So what's the plans for today, Sunday?
Sunday, just hanging out. I'm actually going to meet with one of my buddies that I haven't seen probably since last year. Go grab some lunch or something like that. Catch a vibe for a little while and then pretty much relax the rest of the day.
Is stuff open in Cali then?
So they've been opening in phases. So like restaurants are open, but just outdoor dining right now. Some counties allow 25% capacity indoors, but I'm not trying to mess with anything indoors until I get, my vaccine, shot and all of that. So,
yeah. And how is that? Because I think every state's different in America, isn't it? So have they spoke to you? Have they said to you when you might get yours?
Yeah. So I got the first shot already.
Oh, sweet.
I got the first shot for Pfizer, and interestingly enough, everyone that's kind of like under the transplant program at UCLA, they send you a message and then you can set up your appointment. So they sent me the message and then I got my shot on March 3rd. So I got my first one and then I get my second one on March 23rd and they set up all the appointments for you to just go right up there. It's a really seamless process. They really do a good job up there.
Yeah. Did you have any side effects?
I didn't. No. Nothing at all, except for my arm was really sore. Like, yeah. I couldn't even sleep on that side. Yeah. Like, it was bad for, like, a couple days.
Yeah.
But that's the only side effect. Do you have your shot already?
I had the first one, and I had the Cambridge Analytical one, so it's different to the one you had. But same, okay. I had no side effects, just really dead arm for 2 days.
Yeah, seriously, yeah, that was the worst part.
Yeah. Oh man, well, it's been great to speak to you, and I'm glad you're doing well. You know, after two transplants, well, I suppose technically three transplants, you know,
yeah.
And it wasn't that long ago, and you're looking great.
Yeah, thank you, I appreciate it. Yeah, just I got out the hospital last year. Yeah, March 6th last year. So yeah,
every day's been a blessing.
It seriously has. Like, it's just really crazy. Like, to look back. Because I know when I had first gotten out of the hospital, it was just kind of hard. Like, man, I got so much to do. Like, I was 120 pounds and I didn't have any muscle and stuff. And it's just like, man, I just can't wait until I get back regular, until I get back my weight and all of that stuff. But then after a while, it's just like, just focus on today. Just get today done and you'll be good. And then after a while, you can start looking back. But there's no reason for you to look forward. Just continue to still live in that moment. And don't look forward too far. Just look back and look at what you've already done. And that can be your own motivation.
Yeah, it's a mammoth journey. I mean, because you can go through the process and you can look at these podcasts with people like us that are quite, you know, not massively down the line, but them first few months are really, really hard, I found. And so anyone going through them first few months, you know, you might be looking at this and you think, you know, wow, they seem to be doing so well. But you do get there. It just does take time.
Yeah, I remember I was in the hospital and I had to go get blood work. And this guy sitting next to me, he was like 7 months out, and he was kind of talking to me, and that helped. And he was just like, dude, you're going to get there. Don't even worry about it. Like, just out of nowhere, you're going to start feeling like really good. You'll lose that walker. You'll lose the cane. You'll start walking on your own. You'll start getting stronger and happier and stuff like that. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Like around 7-8 months or so, everything just started getting real good again.
Yeah, it's great. So encouraging for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, man. Thank you for providing this platform and giving me the opportunity to speak, man. And I hope somebody can get some motivation or be inspired by, you know, our conversation today. So I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Every podcast that we put out, I mean, like, everyone's story is so different. Although people have had the same transplants, the story's different. So it's such so good to share a wide range of people's stories.
Yeah, man, for sure.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much. I'll see you later.
Okay, thank you. See you.
Bye-bye.
Later.